Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
For Fritchie singing and the wonderful background support music is awesome. Hello. Good morning. Now let us take a moment to enjoy the music in the air and to arrive. To settle into our seats and begin to become aware of all the extra movement in our body. Let it settle down. So that we may become conscious of our breathing, so regular, so generous, so connecting, so intimate. And I'm going to invite you to let your eyes close, not to shut out the world, but to become more aware of your beautiful imagination, the world within. And let us take the invitation from Don Miguel Ruiz, who invites us to dream a new dream. We would say it like this: use your beautiful imagination to imagine a world in which our vision is already accomplished. In other words, imagine living in a world where each person has enough food, a home, a sense of belonging. Imagine a world of peace and harmony and justice. Imagine with me a world in which we live and grow together, respecting and honoring the interconnectedness of all sentient beings. What that feels like. Imagine with me a world in which our resources are valued and respected, and where there is a generous and ongoing sharing of these resources. And let the next breath you take be a little deeper than the one before, as you begin to prepare yourself to become available to the activity of the room, letting your eyes open as you remain in this quiet state. At the center, we are taught that that which we dwell upon, that which we imagine, especially when it is fueled by the warmth of our feeling, has a habit of affecting the way we show up in the world, or we could say it develops into our habits. So it becomes important for us to think about our habits. Today, our topic is science of mind and morality. And the word moral comes from the Latin for habit. Today, it is used to describe and talk about the standard for correct or right behavior. So I want to go back to 1995, when a survey company was commissioned to discover what views Americans at that time had about our habits and behaviors. The survey focused on such things as consumption, materialism, the environment, and it was conducted across cities all over the United States among Americans from all walks of life. And I'd like to share with you today some of the findings that emerged in 1995 to see if you and I can spot ourselves in any of those findings. First, we Americans, according to the study, believe that our priorities are out of whack. People from all backgrounds in the survey said that they are seriously concerned about the values that are driving our society. They said in the survey that the habits, such as self-centeredness, greed, and materialism, are dominating our culture, and not in a good way. And they expressed a strong desire to get back to a more balanced life, one that includes community, connection, self-responsibility, family, and so on. Another finding from the survey in 1995 said that we Americans have a sense of alarm about the future. We see trouble ahead, those people asked said, if we don't change our course immediately. And some were particularly alarmed about the unsustainability of our lifestyle and the effect that it will have on our children. You know, somebody said, Edward, I come to service to be cheered up. Sorry about that. We'll get there. Here's some more findings. The third one I'm going to share. We Americans, even though we have very serious concerns, we're ambivalent about exactly what to do about it. And some of us are so overwhelmed by the sheer volume and scale of the problems that we see that we feel paralyzed to do anything about it, and also in conflict with our own belief about other people's freedom. So there you have it. Let's fast forward to 2019. Not too different. There is concern about the values driving society still. There is alarm about the future still. There is overwhelm about what to do about it. I was talking to somebody in the social hall a few weeks ago about all of this, and she said to me, Edward, you seem so peaceful. Aren't you ever overwhelmed by it? Yes, I am. Yes, I panic. Yes, I get scared. And that's one of the reasons why I love the Center for Spiritual Living so much, because it's a place that I can come to recharge and refocus and be reminded. I also like the Center because it's filled up with people who mostly think the same way that I do. But it's more than that. The center and its culture challenges me to grow beyond where I am currently, to go in a better direction. It's important because sometimes it seems like it's all coming apart at the same time. The way we govern ourselves, the way healthcare is distributed, the way we educate our children, the unequal distribution of resources. I mean, a person can start to feel helpless to do anything about it. A colleague of mine said, you know, our country, it kind of resembles two kids who've been caught by their parents in a messy room, and each one is blaming the other. Not me, no, it's her, she did it, no, he. And as silly as that image is, if I step back and look at our world, it does seem like that. Like we're trapped in a blame game. Democrats blame the Republicans, and Republicans blame the Democrats, and this religion blames that one, and on it goes. It seems like we've stopped listening to each other. Well, we don't have to listen to each other. Not today. We don't have to listen to people who have a different opinion. We have the ability today to tune into the social media stream that we already agree with. And get comfortable. I went with a friend of mine on a visit to his parents' home. The parents needed some chore done, and so I went with him, and we got there, and in the background, the TV had been turned on to a news program, one that I don't watch ever. So my friend saw my distraction. He said, you know, it's kind of like, it's like that all the time. It's running in the background 24/7, you know. I carried on with the chore, but I could feel it working in me. I could feel myself starting to get irritated. And I started to talk to myself about them. You know, no wonder. No wonder they've become more and more entrenched in their views. No wonder they're more and more irritated and intolerant with those who don't share their opinion. No wonder they're so self-righteous about everything. And then I realized, oh my God, I'm describing myself. I'm describing myself, and everyone who like me gets entrenched in an opinion, whether it's right or wrong. You know, growth can be uncomfortable. Because it sometimes requires that we break away from our entrenchment, from the familiar, from the place where it's comfortable. Sometimes it requires that I seek out a new understanding, one that I didn't have before, and also to let myself be changed by that understanding. I've got to ask, have I become so fragile in my opinion that I don't allow any other points of view to exist? Is anybody watching the TV series, The Crown? Two of you? Well, no spoiler alerts over here in case you're going to watch it. Because it's basically history, right? So I can tell you that in the series in England, the Labour Party wins the election, and Harold Wilson becomes the prime minister, and he's got to meet the queen because, according to the tradition, she has to invite him to form a government in her name. And I'm watching it, and even though I know the history, I'm thinking to myself, how is this going to work? Because the Labour Party traditionally wants to get rid, some of them want to get rid of the monarchy. You know, that odds with each other. So I'm sitting watching this, and it turns out that the two of them have to work it out. They've got to meet weekly with all their differences. And something wonderful happens as a result of honest, vulnerable listening and sharing that neither one of them wanted to do. I was glued to it. You know, the Bible advises us to be transformed through the renewing of our mind. And renew means to reawaken and refresh. And I don't see much of that going on when I get stuck in my thinking and point of view. I am part of it, this polarization, you know. I'm part of it, standing all arms folded, lips pursed, self-righteous. Even though I'm longing to live a spiritual life of love and harmony and inclusion. Imagine if we, like the Queen of England and her Prime Minister, had to sit down every week with someone we strongly disagree with and have a respectful, courteous, civilized conversation. That would be a good habit. To sit down with someone who has made a conclusion that is radically different from the one I have. Sit down for some honest, vulnerable listening and sharing. Maybe some of you will have an opportunity for this on the coming weekend holidays, huh? You can practice. And maybe what we're learning at the center can help us with this, having those kind of conversations. You know what I'm talking about? That principle of oneness. Surely that can help us navigate through differences of opinion. Oh, how can we stay true to this idea of oneness when there is so much to disagree about? Clue. Oneness does not mean sameness. There can be disagreement within the oneness. The key is how to disagree without losing the sense of oneness. So I have some holiday phrases for you to practice with. Whether it's at the Thanksgiving table, or conversation with your children, or your partner, spouse, or your work team, or whoever. How about asking, I'd like to understand your thinking about this. Please tell me more. What about this topic is very important to you? How did you determine that this is true? You got to be careful not to be snarky with that one. Is there a way to show exactly what you mean by that? What do you think so-and-so is trying to accomplish? These are just basically questions from English education curriculum on critical thinking. You know, I was at an event, a civic event, and someone at the event said something spiteful about a politician that I happen to have a lot of respect for. And the person said it directly to me, knowing that I have respect for this politician. The person said, well, how do you like that liar now? I did not use any of these questions. Sorry about that. Instead, I could feel it, you know. You know, my mother used to say to me, Edward, when you get mad, your eyes turn black. My eyes were turning black, and I could feel the conversations happening inside of me. How dare he? It's not only his information was bad, he was bad. I wanted to start attacking him in my thinking, and I wanted to attack him for his lack of respect for me, and his lack of consideration for my opinion, and for his blindness and wrong thinking. And I wanted him to stop having that point of view. I did not want to understand how he got there. And that's the problem. I knew I couldn't speak. Not so long as I thought of him as an idiot and the enemy. I had to somehow get back to the principle of oneness and see him as an expression of the living Spirit Almighty, with a radically different conclusion. I knew what I had to do. I had to get back to the place where I could say to him sincerely, "Tell me more. I'd like to understand your thinking, you divine expression of the living Spirit." You know, I was discussing this with a friend of mine. We were talking about same-gender marriages. We were talking about that place where civil rights and religious freedom intersect, and how do we make room for the diversity of ways of being while staying true to our conscience, you know. Now, my friend has different politics to me, and he's also of a different religion, so we don't agree about this. So in the discussion, he asked me if I would be willing to perform a wedding for anyone who came to me, to which I gave a somewhat indignant yes. You know, he wanted to understand more. He wanted to understand me better. So he asked, is there anybody that you would feel personally challenged serving? Ugh. You know, his question gave me the opportunity to simmer down and think about all the people who challenged me. Right? We've got them. Everyone has someone who challenges them. Sometimes they live with us. This is where Kevin says, "I'm right here." I would be dishonest if I said I treat everyone equally all of the time. You know, sometimes when I'm tired or overcommitted, overextended, it can take more energy than I have to be kind. What? Got to be careful of that thinking. So anyway, my friend continued with the questioning. He asked me, "Would you be willing to perform a wedding for a couple from out of town that came up to Sonoma County who turned out to be white supremacists who had invited an all-white audience and wanted you to include words in the ceremony that reflected their belief?" I became defensive so quickly. I was so upset with him equating same-sex marriages to white supremacists. I said to him, "Gay is not a choice, but being a white supremacist is optional." And then I could feel it, you know. Oh. You know, he didn't say to me, "You're an idiot." He didn't say that. He didn't say to me, "You're being defensive." He didn't say to me, "You need to stop thinking that way. You and your kind is what ruining this world." He didn't say any of that. He wanted to understand how I got to where I was, and he asked me more. His next question was, "What do you think in this situation or situations like it would be the kindest thing to do?" We did settle on the idea that being kind is not the same thing as being weak. That being kind is an attitude toward life that seeks out the gentlest path. And that the road of kindness isn't always free from pain. Difficult choices still arise. Disagreements still emerge. It's not that you and I won't ever disagree with someone. It's how do we stand in our principle, what we teach, about oneness and disagree. My friend and I, we still disagree. But we're still friends. Deeply. A few years ago, I was talking with someone who had difficulty with a certain political figure. So I asked her if she would like me to pray for that figure. There was silence. After a moment, she said, look, I don't want to say no, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid because I don't want him to succeed. So I said, okay, then, do you want me to pray for him to fail? You know, I was being playful with her to point out the conflict. And it was in her eyes. See, that's the problem we're having. We don't know how to respond to this world. And we don't know how to pray. So I asked my friend if she would like separate it from the real world for a moment and imagine a scenario in an imaginary world, a land far away where there was a dictator in another land, and that we were going to pray for this dictator, for this dictator's highest good, which sounds alarming until we get clear that high good doesn't mean more control, more domination, more hurt. No, what kind of good is that? No. High good is a good that is good for all. A good that brings into play harmony and truth. A good that dissolves barriers and restores justice and feeds the hungry. A good that shares resources and cares about the vulnerable and loves children. A good that honors the planet and all of its sentient beings. It's always safe to visualize, dream about, and pray about the highest good for anyone. Even those we strongly disagree with. Especially those. How do we respond to the world? How do we pray? Well, our spiritual role models all over have laid out the track for us. Buddha in chapter 1 of the Dhammapada, paraphrased here. If a person speaks or acts with an evil thought, pain follows them, as the wheel follows the foot of the ox that draws the carriage. For hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. Or Jesus of Nazareth in the book of Matthew paraphrased here. I'm telling you, he said, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you and pray for those who spitefully use and persecute you. How do we respond to the world as spiritual beings when the world favors a bold, combative attack on the opposition? Well, you and I didn't become metaphysicians to go with the crowd. Here are some ideas I think that might help us understanding how to pray and how to respond. Number one, become aware of those who are already helping and support them. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Right? You know, for example, of Sonoma County Acts of Kindness, currently organizing meal drop-offs for the unsheltered. You can read more about them at giveinkind.com. Or pay attention to our nonprofit partners aligned with the center. You're going to hear from one today, Dogwood Animal Rescue Project. And later on this afternoon at 1 p.m., the founder of Days for Girls is giving a presentation for anyone who wants to know about that spectacular work in the world. Number two, become aware of where you are uncomfortable and lean into it. What a setup. Somebody said the true test of intelligence is to be able to consider any idea without taking offense. Ah. Well, here's some homework for you. Whatever TV station you watch, whatever radio program you listen to on your commute, or whatever social media that you are scrolling through, and you know that one that is filled up with all the people who are just like you, where you cheer each other on in your same opinion, that one? I mean, invite you for a whole week to go in the opposite direction and listen to the other one. Because that will give you what you need for the third and final piece of your homework. Pray for the highest good, especially for those you still reject. When I first wrote this bullet, I said, especially for those you still hate. You know, when you said yes to the spiritual path, were you hoping it was going to be easy? Why do you think it's such a small movement? It's not popular to look inside and rout out all the things that are in direct contrast and conflict with what you say you believe. It's not exciting. It's vulnerable. It's embarrassing. But if we don't do it, what hope is there? Just be unrelenting in my pursuit of knowing the truth as best as I can each moment. I invite you to take a breath in with me and exhale, letting your eyes close as we join in a moment of prayer. There's only one Spirit, the living Spirit Almighty, that which is everywhere all of the time, is not created, always present, self-existing, endless, eternal. That Spirit, the mind of creation, I like to say, and I'm recognizing that I am part of its expression. I exist within it, as does every person in this room. That is why I say, and we say, we inherit the qualities and the function of the parent. Today I'm recognizing that as the ability of each one of us to be creative in our imagination, in our choices, in our thought, and to redirect ourselves inwardly to that which has heart and meaning. And to take ourselves in our thinking to that which furthers harmony, collaboration, community, and love. And to abandon all loyalty to the group mind thinking that says we must fight our way to peace. Today, as I speak this word of prayer, it is awakening in me the remembrance that there is no higher authority and there is no greater power and there is no combat in the mind of God. And so I am, and we are, aligning ourselves with the love that is God and trusting it to show the way, to guide the steps, to inspire us to develop new and health-filled habits, not for ourselves alone, but for all beings everywhere. This work in mind causes our compassionate heart to open and for us to be inspired from within to take our place in the community of beings as a helping, healthful presence, humble, teachable, and present. Now I release this word of prayer, holding it lightly, letting it go, understanding full well that as I have spoken, as we have contemplated this prayer, it is already being acted upon by spiritual law, so there is nothing more for me to do but perhaps entertain an attitude of expectation. That I am being shown, we are being shown even now, what is the correct, right, next thing to do, to say, and think. And together we say, and so it is. Won't you take a deep breath in with me like this, followed by a sigh. We use that breath to make transition to the part of our service every week. You hear me describe it as the law of circulation. I only have a few moments each week to say that the law of circulation is characterized by certain practices, giving, receiving, asking, forgiving, and gratitude practices. But truly, each one of those deserves to be unpacked and understood. It is the case that often one of us will be really good at giving, but not that good at receiving. Other people know how to ask for what they want. Some people struggle with that. And still other people, when they do ask for what they want, they ask in such a way that it gets in the way of them receiving what they need. So in January, which is a good time to start, I'm going to be teaching a 5-week course called Circulation, Joining the Dance. So I'm warning you, good things are coming for you in the new year. I'm going to try every week the remainder of this month and next month to tell you about the wonderful things that are being planned for you to get your January started off on the right foot. There's a lot more coming, so I'll give you a little bit at a time. This circulation class is terrific. I hope you'll join us. But there's more, so much more. Free classes, certificated classes, meditations, all sorts of things. We've really put our heads together and asked the question, how can we love and support our community in thriving spiritually in a very interesting year, the year 2020? We're going to need each other and the world to remain you understand, yeah. So I ask you to take your gift, ask the ushers to stand, and will you hold your gift in your hand? And perhaps you gave electronically, then either way, hold your gift or your open hand and your chest as a symbol of your heart connection to your giving. And also at the same time, feel the receiving, the body as it gives to you its beautiful love and care. And say with me, I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.